I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast. John, this is going to be episode number 252.
All right. That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a Hugo Award-winning podcaster for the SF Signal podcast. You can check him out at atfmb.com and follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anelio. I am a musician, a podcaster, and a teacher. You can follow me on Twitter at John Anelio, and you can check our website and our podcast out at functionalnerds.com and all that kind of good stuff. Today, we are joined by C.A. Higgins. She has a new science fiction novel out called Lightless, and it's really good. I'm about halfway through it and really enjoying it. You can check out her website, cahiggins.com, and you can follow her on Twitter as well. We're going to call her Caitlin because that's her name. So Caitlin, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And she got a big grin on her face, John, when you said you were enjoying the book.
Oh, good. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
it's
we
nice get, to hear.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because we are always so fortunate to receive so many great books. We have just a wealth of books between Patrick and I that we get. And I got yours a while ago and it looked very interesting and I was really, really digging it. And it's great. You know, I really feel spoiled that I get to read such good books and before other people too. It's like, I always tell people what I'm reading. They're like, wait, that hasn't come out yet. And it's like, yeah, I got it like a month ago. It's fine.
No
like,
big deal.
No biggie, you know, but I'm really digging it. It's, you know, we can get a little more into, but again, the point I was going to make is that I don't like to spoil, but like our listeners are all big science fiction and fantasy fans and they want to read this stuff and they don't want me to spoil it on them, but I will say it's great. And one of the things that it kind of reminds me of, and I don't know if you've gotten this, and if this comparison is negative, I apologize. But just in terms of the world and the feel, it does have a similar tone to the James S.A. Corey books out there, I think. And those, I know our audience loves those books. So if you like those books, I think you'll dig this one. I don't know if anybody's mentioned that name in the context of your books yet.
Yes, I've heard it mentioned before.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing for you?
It sounds like a good thing. I actually haven't read them yet.
Okay.
They're on my reading list.
Yeah, but no, it doesn't come off as a ripoff hardly at all. That's what I wanted to be careful that you didn't think of that. It's just that it's a future world in our solar system. Mm-hmm. And it's a kind of a grittier science fiction, kind of a little bit of mystery and suspense set in the future of our solar system, which the Corey books are a bit like that too. So if you dig that, here's another great book for you. So cool. Well, you know, let's you know, move right into our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Caitlin, why don't you go first? Why don't you tell us what your pick this week is?
I'm going to be a bit odd and pick music. Yes.
Nothing odd about that here. We pick music all the time.
Yep, we do.
Excellent. Good. I'm fitting the trend. My Brightest Diamond.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah, keep going.
She's a singer-songwriter, and I own just about everything she's ever recorded because she's so good. I think she's classically trained. I love opera, but she does a sort of rock alternative thing, and it's fantastic. So I listen to a lot of it while writing. So
Has she done work with the Decemberists? I feel like I hear them mentioned together quite a bit.
Yes, she has.
Yeah, because I saw the Decemberists years ago at the Wellmont Theater in Montclair, New Jersey, and it was on their Hazards of Love tour, and that was one of my favorite concerts ever. They just sounded so awesome. So I feel like maybe Laura Veers opened up for them that day. Laura Veers is another great singer songwriter too, in that kind of vein. But what particular album are you listening to lately with her?
Particularly Workhorse, which is her first one, which is just fantastic.
Awesome. So. Cool. Yeah. That's a name. You know, I haven't heard that mentioned in a while. I feel like she was getting a lot of press a few years ago. And so that's just one of those things where, you know, There's just so much music out there, and it's like some stuff comes up and you're like, I got to check that out. And then you're like, oh yeah, I remember them. I should go check them out a little more. So, cool. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, and, everyone should go check out My Brightest Diamond. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
My pick this week is going to be the Netflix teasers for Jessica Jones.
Ooh, that's a good one too.
Yeah. Those have been really, really good. I'm getting very excited for the show. It doesn't start streaming until November 20th mm-hmm. on Netflix, but this is the continuation of the Marvel Universe on Netflix. So it started mm-hmm. with Daredevil, and then we're going to get mm-hmm. Jessica Jones. We're going to get Luke Cage. We're going to get, what's his partner? Iron Fist,
yeah.
And we're going to mm-hmm. get another season of Daredevil, which is going to be mm-hmm. cool. And then at some point they all get together and do the team thing. So it's interesting because the actress who plays Jessica Jones, typically I don't like her.
Yeah, I've seen her before. She's done quite a bit of other stuff. She's a younger actress, but she's already, you know, has quite a few credits already to
Well,
her,
she
to
did a it. She did a sitcom, I think, for ABC called Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23.
Yes, I recall seeing that, yeah.
And so, I mean, she's normally done comedy stuff is what I've seen her in. So to see her take on a role like this, it's interesting. I don't know. I mean, so far it looks like it's going to be really cool. And I after Daredevil, I trust them.
Yes.
So, I mean, they cleansed the Affleck palette, you know, they got rid of that whole thing. Of course, DC is going to ruin Batman now with Affleck, but it just looks interesting. So, and I like the teasers that they've been doing, little bits here and there. The 10th Doctor's in it as mm-hmm. Purple Man, and they did a nice little teaser with him. So it's just they're doing a really good job of building up my anticipation for this show.
Cool, very good, very good. I'm going to pick an app of sorts. I guess you would call it an app. As I've talked about quite a bit on the show, I cut cable about almost a year ago, and I watch everything through a Roku player, and I've been anxiously awaiting HBO Now to show up on the Roku player. And it finally did, like 3 months after it should have, but it finally did. So what's kind of cool is you get a month for free of it, because then it's like, I think $14.99 a month. And I don't know if I'm going to keep going with it, but I wanted to watch the most recent seasons of Game of Thrones. So I've been watching them. Yeah, it's, you know, there's not much to say in terms of the app. It's just an app that you can watch videos on the Roku player. But I've actually been watching a little bit on my computer sometimes, too. So it's kind of nice when you, I mean, all the video services are like that nowadays. But I love the fact that you can watch like 20 minutes on your computer and then watch some more of it on your Roku player. And
what is the app?
It is just HBO Now.
Oh, so, HBO Now. Okay.
Yeah. If I didn't mention that already. Yeah. HBO Now is the one that you can, where you pay a monthly fee directly to HBO. Instead of having a cable account. So if you like the HBO shows, it's worth, and you have access to all the movies that are currently on HBO too. So right now there's like the most recent X-Men movie is up there, which I haven't seen yet. So I'm sure I'll watch that. And, Dave Grohl's, music documentary series. There's like 10 episodes of that. I'm sure I'm going to get into that a little bit. So there's a lot of good stuff and on it. And whether it's worth $14.99 a month, I don't know. I'm gonna get the free month. I suspect I'll probably end up doing it for a month or two, and then maybe canceling it. And then when the new series of Game of Thrones starts, I'll re-up it for a couple months, which I suspect a lot of people will do that as well. So that's my pick this week. If you have a Roku player and have been waiting for it, it is up there now, and it works just fine. So that is my pick this week. Now, Caitlin, for you. So, you know, this is your debut novel. Am I correct there?
Yes. First one.
So maybe you can tell us, because I was reading your bio and they were talking about.
Congratulations, by the way.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
You know, especially getting published by Del Rey for your first book, that's no small feat. So yeah, absolutely. Congratulations on that. And maybe you can tell, because it seems like there's an interesting story on how this novel, according to your bio, it seems like the idea kind of hit you all at once. So maybe you can tell our listeners a little bit of the story about how the inspiration for this book happened.
How that happened? Yeah. I studied physics in college, and I wrote the book while I was studying physics in college. And I got the idea in a class where we were talking about thermodynamics, particularly equations of state. And we were doing a problem where we had a box full of particles I'm going to describe how the particles react. And it was ideal gas particles, which when they're cold, they huddle together. The box gets smaller. They freak out, hit the walls, that sort of thing. And so I sort of looked at these particles and I was like, oh, they're kind of like people. It was a little bit crazy. But it worked for me. And so I thought, what if I had an isolated group of characters who I treated sort of like the particles in the box, where I changed their environment and saw how they reacted and saw how their interaction with each other made everything go more and more chaotic. So.
And what's the sort of path in terms of writing the book? Obviously, that's the idea, but it's not, I suspect you didn't just knock it out in a weekend. So so how does it go? You know, are you a heavy plotter with your books? Did you kind of just have the idea and run with it? How did that go?
I am a heavy plotter. I have just outlines on outlines on outlines. And so I came up with the idea and then I wrote a little bit and I stopped and I outlined it and then I wrote. And I did that a lot of between classes, over breaks, that kind of thing.
Mm. And, you know, so how, you know, from start to finish, how long did it take you to complete? Well, I don't, you know, obviously there's the published form now, but where it was in a pretty close state to where it is now, how long a time for that?
Maybe 2 years.
Okay. Yeah. Now, one of the other things that I found quite interesting is that said you also, you know, because we could probably talk about your physics, or I really can't talk about your physics. I don't know anything about physics.
Really. The whole universe was in a hot, dense state. That's about all I know about physics.
Yeah, there
that's
you go.
It.
That's it. There's not much else to it. But it also mentioned that you have worked in theater. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about your experience working in theater.
My day job is in theater right now, which mm-hmm. is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I always liked theater. My friends in high school were theater people. I went to college. I minored in theater. Mm-hmm. Not performance. Mm-hmm. Backstage stuff. Costume shop mostly. Mm-hmm. Which is, it's very interesting. It's very interesting people. It's very exciting.
Yeah. But you know, my wife has done, she's a psychologist, but she's done a lot of theater. And there was one night where my son's 9 years old and, his pajamas were all black. He had like black and then black, you know, black pajama pants, black pajama tops. And my wife just happened to be wearing black pants and a black shirt. And like, they like walked out of the bathroom when they were, you know, getting ready for bed. And she's like, look, we're stage crew.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know a lot of, I went to, as I mentioned before the show started, I went to Montclair State and I was mm-hmm. a music major there. And there was a theater program there as well. And they had a big sort of, I don't know what the name of the major is, but it was basically, you know, you would get a degree in doing that, in doing the, you know, the backstage stuff. And I knew a lot of people that did that. And, you know, if you're into that work, it seems like there's work there to do. And it's in a super important part of the whole process. So, you know, it's, I don't know. So, I mean, do you have any interesting stories about some of that work?
It's a dangerous question.
Yeah.
I, not off the top of my head. I'm an outliner. I'd need to outline a story before I told it to you.
Well, no. So that is, do you feel like your experience, you know, being in that world and then obviously watching a lot of theater and being involved in it, do you feel like that has an impact on the stories that you tell in your fiction?
Yeah, I think so. It certainly has affected the way that I would tell the story. I thought of a lot of lightness more as almost just like a play where you've got this one setting, you've got the characters in it and they interact in that setting. And then I change the scene, that sort of thing. I spent one afternoon with my agent discussing what vocal parts the characters would have if it were an opera. So,
can you know, I'm a musician, so I'd love to hear what they are. Cause I'm about halfway through the book. So I'd love to hear the musical analogy with this.
Let's see. Ida was a coloratura, soprano, for sure. In the Queen of the Night kind of vein.
Mm-hmm.
Ivan was a tenor and so was Maddie. Domitian was a baritone, I think. No, Gagnon was the baritone. So we pretty much stuck to the standard stereotypical roles there.
And that's interesting. So, you know, what's, you know, I would like you to, you know, because as a creative, I play around with this to try to, you know, most creative folks that I know, they have a lot going on. Most people have a day job. And that's, you know, in the 5 or 6 years that we've done this podcast, that was the thing that was the most surprising thing to me, is how many people, you know, because I think it's almost like musicians in a certain way. If people feel like if you know who a musician is, that, well, they must be a millionaire, obviously. And I think that's the way that I used to feel about authors until I started talking to a lot of them. And it's very few that even are able to do it full time. And so you have to work it into your day in the way, you know, and you have to try different things. And especially as you get older and you have families and everything. So I'm always very curious on how people go about their creative process. So one of the questions I want to ask you is, what does the first 60 to 90 minutes of your day look like? I mean, maybe you do nothing creative that early, but do you have like sort of a morning routine that you follow?
I do most of my writing on the weekends because I need long blocks of uninterrupted time. In the morning, I pretty much wake up, roll over, grab my phone, check the internet, and eat.
Yeah. So,
but I work on weekends. Yes.
Okay. So describe what your kind of weekend creative schedule looks like then.
I use one day for just relaxing or shopping or whatever I have to do. And then one day I write on. So I'll wake up, I'll make coffee. I'll go downstairs. I have a little room in my apartment. That's sort of like an office. I'll come down here, put in my headphones, start playing music, drink my coffee, and then I'll just write. I'll stop for meals, unfortunately, breaking up my day. But other than that, I just come down here and I write until it's too late for me to write anymore, or until I'm too tired and I've reached a good stopping point.
That's interesting. You know, there's, because I feel like I've come across a lot of writers who have daily word counts and they jam in it. Like they really try to get at least a little bit in every day. But I certainly understand your method too. I'm sort of 50-50 on it. I've dabbled with a little bit of writing. I'm not a writer at all. I've done NaNoWriMo twice. That's the extent of my writing in my life. And I was considering doing it again this year. And I was thinking about it and I don't think I'm going to, but you know, one of the things I noticed is like, I think with writing more than a lot of other creative things, I get where you're coming from with that, because last weekend when I was thinking about it, I gave myself a couple of hours on a Saturday afternoon and I really did just sort of think about, well, if I write something, maybe it'll be like this. And I started sort of plotting out, and it really took until like into the third hour that I really felt like I was sort of doing anything of value in terms of the art. And I don't know if that's particular to write. Patrick's a writer. So Patrick, what's your experience, right? Because I think you kind of do a little bit every day. Do you try to put longer blocks for yourself, Patrick?
No, the way it's working for me right now is lunchtime every day.
Yeah.
And then at night, if I get a shot at it, typically from 9 p.m. to midnight. And then I got to be up again by 6:45 to, you know, get to the sports factory. I work for a company that teaches people how to play golf. I'm in their marketing department. Well, I'm in their marketing department, and we are the world leader in golf instruction, and we use technology. So that's kind of what I like about it. It's a nerdy thing. You come into our bays and we hook you up with motion sensors, and you take a couple swings and numbers appear on the screen, and we say, okay, so here's your numbers. Cool. And here's where you need to be. So this is what we're going to do. And I'm in the marketing department there. So I have to be, you know, at work at a certain time. And then in my lunches, I covet. I leave and I go off site and I sit down and I open up Scrivener. And if you're not using Scrivener yet, Caitlin?
No. Microsoft Word.
You should check out, and for me, John, what changed my life as far as, you know, going from being a pantser / discovery writer to being a plotter and outliner was Rachel Aaron's book, 2K to 10K. You know, because she figured out that she needed to hit her deadlines. She had to be writing 10,000 words when she sat down to write. You know, she couldn't be writing 2,000 words. And it was because she had a limited amount of time. You know, mm-hmm. she had just had the baby, and the only times that she could write was when someone was babysitting. So mm-hmm. she needed to maximize that time. So she came up with a system on really how to outline and plot and get everything set up so that when she sat down, there was no guessing, no questions, no any idea of, you know, like, I'm going to go off in this weird tangent. She knew what she was going to write. She had the outline ready and she would just write. And so that's what I do now. And unlike Caitlin, when I come to a stop, I don't come to a natural stopping point. I like to leave myself... at the end, I don't even sometimes finish the sentence so that when I come back and sit down, now I have to finish the sentence and I can just jump right in and keep moving.
I believe Cory Doctorow calls that a jagged edge. And he's the same way. Cory Doctorow writes, I think the way he wrote figured it out is that in terms of his fiction, and he writes a lot of nonfiction too, but in terms of his fiction, he writes essentially a page a day.
And I don't do pages because I'm in Scrivener. So I, you know, it's not set up that way for me. Mm-hmm. I tell people all the time, if you have a system that works and Word is working for you, then use a system that works for you. I do. If you're like me and another moment spent in Microsoft Word means that you are going to start physically harming yourself, then Scrivener is an alternative for you. And when I'm on target and when things are working correctly, I'm doing 12 to 1600 words in my lunch hour.
Mm-hmm. So that's a lot.
I don't do pages.
That is a lot.
I just do word count. Mm-hmm. And I've got my little progress bar up there that tells me, you know, I've got to hit a certain count if I want to finish this draft by a certain date. You know, it figures it all out for me. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do. And then on the weekends when I'm not batch recording episodes with you, you know, I do something very similar to what Caitlin does. I get up, I get coffee, I go back upstairs, and I put my headphones on, and I plug in Hans Zimmer or some other type of music, and I start listening, and I just start writing.
Mm. Yeah. I know Doctorow does the same thing. He likes to like leave it mid sentence so that the next day when he comes back to it, he doesn't have to think like, where should I go now?
And I learned that from Murr. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Murr used to talk about doing that too, because what it does is you don't have to sit down and go, okay, now it's like you just read the last sentence. You're like, oh yeah, that's right. They were about to jump into the lava pit, you know, whatever the story is. So, and boom, you're done.
Yeah. So Caitlin, you know, this is your first book and you have, you know, these other interests, but in terms of what inspired you to just be a writer in general, like who are some of the authors that you admire?
So many. Some of my favorite authors when I was a kid were Tolkien, K.A. Applegate. I loved Animorphs, Robin Hobb, that kind of thing. A lot of fantasy, actually, especially. So those inspired me. And also, my mom's an author. So when I was a kid, it's a lot of, oh, this is what mom does. Yeah, I can do this.
Well, that's
and
interesting.
I like it.
That's interesting because Laura Resnick has been on SF Signal before, and we've talked about, you know, her dad is Mike Resnick, and she grew up in a house with a writer, and by the time she was an adult, she's like, I am never doing this crap because I want to be able to pay my bills and take trips and afford stuff, and then she ended up doing it anyway.
Yes. You
know, and now she loves it, but she's like, I knew better, but I did it anyway.
Mistakes. I made the same mistakes. Yeah. No, I've had that speech. That
well, you know, I think sometimes, because I would suspect many people just think, oh, that's impossible to be a writer. And I think a lot of times things that we end up doing in our life, sometimes all we need is to have that example of, hey, that's possible because my mom's doing it, or this person's doing it, or, you know, it's kind of like the, I think the example they often use is the 4-minute mile. Everyone always thought it was impossible to run a mile faster than 4 minutes. And then once one person did it, then many other people broke it right away because they realized, like, well, yeah, it can be done, of course. Well, so we'll do it.
I think it's about setting expectations, though, John. You have to understand, yes, you can be a writer, you know, and you can write good stories and have good characters that engage people and have people that love your stuff. That doesn't mean that you're going to get a John Scalzi deal. It doesn't mean that you're going to be James Patterson, right? Or Suzanne, what's her name?
Grafton?
No, the one, I'm blanking on her last name. Collins? Okay. That wrote all the bestsellers, you know, and you're not going to, it's not necessarily, I mean, you could be the next Tom Clancy. You could be the next Robert Jordan. You could be the next Kate Elliott. I don't know. But you just have to set your expectations and understand that, you know, it's not easy, and it's not going to pay your mortgage necessarily. It takes a lot of hard work to do that.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that brings me to something that I've been thinking about quite a bit lately, Caitlin, for myself with music, but I asked this question to a recent guest as well. And it was, this book that I read, called Flow. It's by a psychologist named Mihai Csikszentmihalyi. And it's this idea of becoming so immersed in your activity that you lose track of time. And the thoughts behind this book is, it's sort of like the psychology of happiness, is that people who are happier are more engaged in what they're doing in their life. So is that something that you experience? Because you're spending a large chunk of time working on it. Do you have that experience where you're like, wow, I've been working on this for 5 hours and you didn't realize it?
Yeah, that's my favorite part of my week. And I never quite lose track of time entirely because there is this terrible, you know, little device in the corner of my screen that tells me exactly what time it is at any moment.
You can turn that off.
I should just like put a piece of paper or something so I can flip it up if I need to know, but I will sort of fall. Someone once called it to me falling into the page when I'm writing, and then you know the time moves for me the way it's moving for characters.
What you need to do, Caitlin, and unfortunately our listeners can't see this because I couldn't quite get the streaming working this morning, but we think we figured it out for the next time. But what they're not going to be able to see is this, which I'm going to show you. This is the clock you need to get. it's a writer's clock. And it basically says, you know, publish, write, toss, retrieve, start over, writer's block, adult beverage, write, submit, revise, revise. And those are the minute hands.
I see that. Very nice.
That's the clock you should get yourself. And then you won't have to worry about it.
Take out the batteries, leave it stuck on revise.
Exactly, which is where I have it. I have it on write and revise.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, I think, you know, from all the authors that we've spoken to over the years, I think that's where the job part of being a writer is that revision. You know, I said I did National Novel Writing Month twice, and I did that, which essentially, if you do it in the spirit that it's meant, it's you're writing a very fast first draft, and I did it, and I enjoyed doing it, but I had no interest or stamina to like go and look at it and try to revise it, and I was just like, yeah, that was fun. I did that. I'm not doing it.
So, John, there's if you go back and go to SF Signal and look at the podcast, there's episode with R.L. Stein.
Okay,
so everybody knows R.L. Stein. He wrote Goosebumps,
right?
And he took a little break, and now he's writing Goosebumps again. And they made the movie with Jack Black and all this kind of stuff. There's some interesting things. Number one, he types with one finger.
Wow. Just one, or does he have
just
two fingers?
One.
Just one with one hand. Okay.
And he will stick that finger in your face and show you this gnarl. I mean, it's a gnarl. It looks nasty. And he's like, this is the finger that I type with. This is it. And if you listen to those podcasts that I did with him, and I think we did one here too, he talks about, this was at a writer's conference, and people were asking him, how do you stay motivated to write? How do you stay motivated to do these things? You know, how do you do the work? And he eventually said, I don't understand you people. This isn't work. This is fun. He said, this is how I have fun. I have fun telling stories and scaring kids. He said, so I don't know how to answer that question because it's not work for me. It's not something that I got to get up and I got to do this and I got to do that. He's like, no, I get to get up and I get to do this. It's fun. And I think when you talk about the work of revising, as writers, we need to shift that into, it's fun, right? We're still getting to tell the story. It's the whole thing that Rachel talks about in her book. And I apologize for keep mentioning that, but you have to fall in love with your characters in your book all over again as you're working on it and as you're revising. You know, you have to find that fun.
Yeah. That's the shift that I made in music, was getting back to that feeling of fun, because it was starting to not be fun for me for a while. And I'm having a great time with it now because I let go of whatever kind of expectations that I had with it.
Now here's...
And I'm like...
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Just that, because I had some success with it, I sort of started chasing the success part of it and not really thinking about the playing part as much, or just not focusing my energy on it, and now that's all I think about with it, and I do it, and I'm in a much happier place now because I'm just into the music part of it, like I was when I was 18 years old or whatever. It's much more of a joy now than it had been over the past few years.
And here's the interesting part for Caitlin and my question to her. So she took 2 years to write Lightless and sold it and got a book deal. Now, did you get a single book deal, or did they ask for a couple books?
Three books.
So three books. So now she's under deadline. Right, book two. She's not going to get 2 years. So how does that shift how you work and how you get stuff done? Because now you kind of have to put the words on the page.
Yes. Well, I'm lucky because book two is actually already done. I'm working on book three. But it's when I was getting the contract, it was sort of like, well, how fast can you write these books? And I was like, I think I can do it in a year. And I can do it in a year. So I sort of started off with the knowledge that it was a reasonable amount of time. And my current job actually gives me a month off in the summer. So I get like a draft and a half done in that time. It's amazing. and I don't know, instead of sitting down and just sort of meandering, I sit down and to work, which it's fun. Like you said, I actually really like revising because then you know where the story's going more. But I do sit down with a sense of, okay, I'm going to not get distracted by like Cracked or Twitter or something. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to get through this. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, as we begin to wrap it up here a little bit, so your book Lightless is out now and it's in hardcover and there's ebooks. Is there an audiobook for it?
There is. I've listened to it. It was fantastic. Kind of surreal to hear, people who have only spoken in my head before, but it was great. Yeah.
I'm sorry if I'm putting you on the spot. Do you know the name of the narrator of the book?
Fiona Hardingham.
Okay, good. Because sometimes I ask people that, and then
they're new. Boom.
You know, I feel like I asked that question. It's only 50 people know, and then they feel awful. They're like, I can't remember their name. I'm a horrible person. I should know that. And so I'm glad that you know it, because Patrick and I have talked a lot about.
I love audiobooks. Love them.
Yeah, I do too. I consume books every way. Again, fortunate to get so many physical copies sent to us. So I still like reading physical copies, but I I've been reading your book mostly as the ebook too, because I got the e-arc of it as well. So I read a lot at the gym. I'm on the elliptical machine. I sit with my Kindle up there and I read through, and I get a half hour reading done every day, just doing that. But I like physical books and I like the ebooks and I like audiobooks too. And so, and I do like if there's like the whisper sync with it too. And I think they all give you something a little different. And I think if you're someone who gets a lot out of reading. If for me, I'm reading more now than I ever did in life. I mean, I read about five or six books a month now, which is insane. I didn't even read that many books in a year many years ago. So it's that always having, we live in a wonderful time with audiobooks and ebooks, and where if you're interested in reading, you have something available to you to read at all times. And yes. And I thought you were talking about Twitter and Cracked and all that. I mean, I have my blog feed as well, but I find like, it's like, well, those are kind of low quality. I shouldn't say low quality, but they're just like low engagement. It's like, all right, yeah, cool. You know, the new Marvel movie's coming out. That's cool. And I'll look at that in a day, but I'd rather go to my Kindle or go to my phone and like read something or listen to an audiobook or have the book there and, you know, knock out a couple pages of the book. And, you know, at the end of the year, it's like, wow, I've read this many books and I don't know. So I feel smarter.
So just so you understand, Caitlin, John said in the beginning that this, he compared it to The Expanse from James S. I. Corey, which is one of my absolute favorite book series. Absolute favorite. So, I just over on the laptop just clicked buy on the audiobook for Lightless. So it's now in my queue and will be listened to very shortly.
Oh, that's very gratifying.
Boom, cool. You made a sale.
Yeah.
You made a sale on a podcast. So there you go.
Yeah. So, you know, so Lightless is out now. So when do you have a release date of book two? Because you said it's done.
Yes, I don't have a definite release date yet.
Next week?
I believe it's sometime next year. Yes, exactly. Today. Surprise. I believe it's sometime next year.
Okay, great. Well, very good. So as we wrap up, why don't you let our listeners know where they can find you online, what your website and your Twitter and all that kind of stuff is.
My website is cahiggins.com. You can follow me on Twitter at c_a_higgs because someone else took C.A. Higgins. And I'm going to hunt them down. you can also find me on Facebook, also as C.A. Higgs. And I'm on Tumblr for the first time as C.A. Higgins.
Ooh. And so. Are you going to be making any convention appearances or anything like that in the upcoming weeks, months?
I was at Comic-Con last week.
Ooh, okay.
Which is exciting. And then tonight I'm going to be in Montclair, New Jersey at Watchung Booksellers.
Cool. Cool. Are you going to World Fantasy or any of those kind of conventions coming up?
I am not.
Okay.
But if that changes, you can find on my website.
All right. All right. Cool. All right. Well, and for us this week, we want to take a moment to thank all of the people, our patrons who are backing us on Patreon. We launched it a few weeks ago, and Patrick and I are overwhelmed by your support. And it's very validating. It's like people are really listening. I can't believe it. I always just think we're just doing this for he and I. And it's like, wow, people are listening and are willing to back us. So if you're backing us, thank you so much. It really has I'm very touched, and I think Patrick and I are both really bolstered by the support. Yep. Not even so much financially, but just sort of even though it is doing much better than I suspected it would financially already, and but just, you know, sort of from just a you know, just sort of an emotional backing of us. It's really, it's made a big difference. So thank you so much. And if you like the show and you listen every week and you get value and you want to hear about cool new books like Lightless from Caitlin here, you know, consider becoming one of our patrons. Just go over to patreon.com/functionalnerds, or you could just go to our website, functionalnerds.com. We have a link to the Patreon there, and check out the levels and see if there's something that you would like to support us at the dollar level or the $3 level or the $5 level, or we have many people at the $10 level as well. So check it out. See if you like anything. You could do cool stuff like watch a live stream, get a Patreon only, just the two of us episode, and all sorts of good stuff like that. So go and check it out there. Patrick, anything else you want to mention before we wrap it up here?
Go buy Lightless.
All right. Very good. All right. Caitlin, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All right. And everybody else, have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still-
still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?